Okay. Before we get into the agenda of the meeting today, and let me give you the chance, do you have an apology?
Thank you. We have an apology from Professor Lotri and Ms. Sibiya. We have two apologies, Mr. Bonjane, Ms. Bia, she's attending police, and Professor Lotrit.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Let me welcome everyone to the meeting, and we are very happy today that we're having our Deputy Minister as part of our meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. We feel honored when you are amongst us. Today's agenda is very... We have got one item on the agenda, of which is very important. The item that we have been waiting for as a committee for quite a long time. We've been looking forward to this report on the transformation by the Transformation Oversight Committee on Equity Index in South African institutions. I believe it is led by Professor Mahoba. And to this committee, as this portfolio committee, we have been waiting for this report for such a long time. We've got so many questions that we need to pose. There are so many areas of clarity and discussions that we have as a committee. So, as I said, even if we've got one item on the agenda, but I know it will take a little bit long because there's so much that I believe will come from the committee itself after hearing the presentation that we are going to be getting today. Deputy Minister, maybe before I even allow the committee to lead us on the discussions. It is our culture that if we are here or the minister is here, we give you a chance just to say the words of welcoming or whatever that you want to say before we move over to the committee to do the presentation. So can I allow you to do that?
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Acting Chair, members of the committee and colleagues. Chair, let me just forward an apology that I will be dashing to the select committee, which starts at 10, because they're presenting an annual report. But I thought I should just come and be part of the process as this committee would be presenting for the first time to a portfolio committee. You'd remember, Chair, that the minister appointed the oversight committee on transformation last year. That is led by Professor Mahoba. He will introduce the delegation. Members of the committee are here as well. The committee really will be presenting on the equity index, which seeks to monitor, guide, and drive transformation for South African universities. They will give a detailed report on the work that we've done thus far. Some of the revelations will be shocking to the portfolio committee, but necessary if we are indeed to change the situation around. But I'm happy that you will be engaging the report. Mm-hmm. They are here, you will pose the questions, and they'll be able to respond to all the questions. Safe to say, this is the first quantitative measure to really measure issues of transformation in the sector, and I think it was necessary that though we delayed in appointing committee, but eventually at the point where we did, the work that they've done thus far, we have full picture of what needs to be done, of the challenges that are still there, which if they're not addressed and dealt with, will hamper really and delay transformation in our universities. Chair, I'm going to end there, and through you, allow the Professor Mahoba to introduce the report and his delegation, and thereafter
Honorable Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee, and my colleagues from KZN and from the Transformation Oversight Committee. Thank you for giving us an opportunity, I think, to present this piece of work, this which is much awaited, I think, both by the committee and, I believe, by the rest of the country. This work, it's a work of many people that I just want to point out. We received strong support from the Department of Higher Education and Training in terms of the data that we have used to analyze the results that you'll hear from. And this is audited data that is reported by all our institutions to the Department of Higher Education and Training, and is the data audited for 2007 and 2011. And we were provided this support with extraordinary people going out of their way to assemble the data for us. And this was led by Chief Mavizela, who's here. And we also had the fortune to work with the Director General, Statistician General, Padli Hosha, who was able to design, I think, the age-adjusted reference benchmarks. And we had to travel him wherever he was in the world to provide us, and he did that exceptionally well. Clearly, I think this work is the work, the brainchild really of two of my colleagues that are here, Professor Kesh Govinda, who is the head of mathematics, statistics, and computer science at the university, and Nombuso, who is a master's student at the university in statistics. I think the university did a mistake by sending Kesh Govinda to the U.S. last year. And I think it was when he was on this mission that it dawned on him that there is an old mathematical formula that could be used. And when he got back, and I remember where we exactly met in the council chamber, he said, you know, is there something we can do to measure transformation in the country? I need data. Where can we get it? And I said, if you need data and you've got some idea of how to fix this, let's try and get the data and get people who can work hard and calculate the numbers. And this is what Nombuso has been doing. They're working out all the statistics, the numbers, and we're analyzing it in the context. However, we understood this work to underpin the work of the Transformation Oversight Committee. In fact, I don't think we would have undertaken it if the minister had also not appointed the Transformation Oversight Committee. So we discussed, I think, this issue, this whole data and the results, with the Transformation Oversight Committee. Just to give the Portfolio Committee as to how and where we have been. In May, the 7th of May, we presented the initial formula and the results to the Transformation Managers Forum of the higher education sector, that is of all the universities. And after that, we were invited, I think Chief was there and some other members of the department, we were invited to present the same data to the MMM of the Department of Higher Education and Training. After that, we were then requested by the MMM to actually engage with the higher education branch of the Department of Higher Education and Training, and we had a meeting with them to discuss the formula so that they could understand. And following that meeting, it was recommended that we should then meet the sector, that is, the vice chancellors of the 23 universities and the chairs of council. That meeting took place on the 29th of August at that famous St. George's Hotel just outside the airport. And there was a big engagement there. There was a report that was produced, and I wanted that report, and I hope that report has been given to members of the Portfolio Committee, because it is from there that the members of the Transformation Oversight Committee and the sector engaged, and there were some few issues that was raised there that they wanted us to bring when we come to present to the Portfolio Committee. So we are here after that long process of consultation with inputs across the sector and within the Transformation Oversight Committee itself. On the sidelines, the research underpinning this work has also been peer-reviewed by anonymous scholars in the field. We have had mathematicians involved in this. We have had people who are involved in the policy framework of higher education in transformation review this. So there will be a paper published in the Academy of Science Journal, either towards the end of this month or early next month, that shows the underpinning, the research underpinning of the work. So all in all, I think we have taken a rounded approach where the work has been peer-reviewed. We have gone through the famous consultation process of our country through the sectors and various stakeholders, and we are ultimately coming here, I think, to present to the portfolio committee, I think, to share the details and some of the inputs that were raised, I think, during the stakeholders meeting. And without further ado, I think I should ask Professor Govender, the person who has been, leading this from the point of really the formula that people need to understand that underpins this work, and to give the presentation, and then there will be an engagement. I don't want to give any result. I think all of you must hear it for yourselves, and then you can pose a relevant question. Madam Chair, thank you very much. But I also want to thank Anele, I see, for being able to organize this on our behalf. Kesh, I think the floor is yours.
Thank you, Professor, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure today to speak to you about the concept called the Equity Index and show how it can monitor, guide, and drive transformation for South African universities. What I'll do in my talk is just present the ideas behind the formula, present the formula to you, give you a snapshot using 2011 data of the status of the sector, and talk a little bit about councils and senates, and then look actually at the pace of transformation, looking at data in 2007 versus 2011, and projecting forward. Okay, so that's going to be the basis for the summary of the presentation. So the main ideas, the main motivation behind this approach is enshrined in our constitution, the 1997 Education White Paper, and also the employment equity legislation. And we comment in our paper that it's interesting that this very simple and in our view elegant formula actually impacts three major pieces of legislation in the country. And we don't believe that that hasn't done before. Before I just take you through the often dry numbers that we throw out, I would just want to give you a snapshot to tell you exactly how dire the situation is. And we'll come back to this towards the end of the presentation. I call this the long walk to transformation. So if we look at the enrollment of students in the 23 universities in South Africa, if we want the equity profile of the enrolled class to mirror the national demographics, at the current rate, we have to wait 12 years. If we want the equity profile of the graduating class to reflect the national demographics, we've got to wait 14 years. So this is already 19 years post-democracy. We still have this period to wait. The situation, unsurprisingly, is much worse when we look at staff. If we look at the overall staff situation at the universities, taking all the sectors into account, we have to wait another 43 years for that to reflect the national demographics. If we just focus on academic staff, the situation is slightly better. We only have to wait 40 years. So that just tells you, in summary, using our formula, using analysis, that's the sort of statements we can now make. And this is the first time we can actually make those statements because we didn't really have a means or a tool to do that previously. So what is our equity index? It uses an age-old mathematical formula that works out the distance between two points. And the two points that we're going to be using is the institution's demographics, the university's demographics, and the national demographics. Now, today, because we're presenting to the Higher Education and Training Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, we're talking about universities. But this idea can apply to any sector, absolutely any sector. And in fact, we will be speaking to Labour at some stage to look at how this can be incorporated into the reporting for all institutions and all companies and organizations in countries. So this is a much broader appeal. We've been also very clear that we're going to be using national demographics because the transformation of the system has been monitored nationally. So we want to get a national picture, use the national demographics, but more importantly, we can now disaggregate not just the national picture, but also to an institutional level. This allows us to compare different institutions and see which institutions are doing better, where we need to intervene, where we need to actually make some change. Very importantly, the data that we use is the department's data. We haven't created any data of our own. We sourced all of this from the department. It's standard HEMIS data. And it's also not created by the department. It's filtered by the universities. So all the universities have ownership of the data. So this has been used for historical analyses, but now we're just making those data far more transparent. So just to go back to the idea of the distance formula, let's assume we're all trying to go to Polokwane. Okay. Obviously, if you're in Cape Town, you have quite a long distance travel. If you're in Kimberley, it's shorter. You're a lot closer to Polokwane. And of course, if you're in Johannesburg, you're the closest of the three cities. So just using that simple idea, if you take our national demographics as where we want to go, if your distance is a large number, it means you have a longer distance to travel to get to the national demographics. And this is why we like the idea of the distance formula as well. Just the name of it tells you something about what it is telling you. So the next slide is going to be the formula. I'm sorry, I have to show it through a formula actually at some stage. But for those of you who remember the theorem of Pythagoras, this is exactly the theorem of Pythagoras you learned in high school. Okay? All it is instead of just taking two components in each point, we take any number of components. Okay? So that's the mathematical formula that we're going to be using, but more importantly, we contextualize it to demographics. And so essentially what we're doing is we're taking a percentage of a particular demographic for the institution, subtracting it from the percentage of the same demographic at the national level, okay, squaring the difference, and doing that for every single demographic. So in our study, we've taken six categories. So it'll be African, colored, Indian, white, male, and female. Okay, so those are the six categories. Those are the six percentages that we use. And so when you calculate your equity index, it gives you a single number. And this, I think, is something that not many people appreciate. When you look at percentages in six different categories, in some you'll be moving towards the national demographics, in others you'll be moving away. And you can't really say overall whether you're moving towards the national demographics in a positive way. By working out the equity index and getting a single number, you're able to do this. There's a particular nuance with the equity index. And this, going back to this particular slide, tells us a little bit about that. Let's assume we want to go to that red dot, which is just near Kimberley. Whether we start in Cape Town or in Polokwane, we're going to travel the same distance. So both Polokwane and Cape Town are the same distance away from that red dot, but we all agree that you'll be going in different directions. You'll be taking different routes to get there. So while institutions may have the same or similar equity indices, it doesn't mean they have the same profile. It just means they have the same distance to travel, and each one will have to come up with its own path to get to the national demographics. So that's just a subtle nuance of using the formula. The percentages that we used were all based on the 2011 census. So the first column that says overall gives you the actual breakdown. The third column, which is the age group 17 to 40, is the percentages that we use to look at the student data, the enrolled student data and the graduated student data. The age group 18 to 65 was used to compare as a benchmark for all the staff, while the age group 24 to 65 was utilized just for the academic staff. Okay, so this was suggested by the scientific reviews of our article, and we interacted with SAS-SA as well to make sure that we have this nuanced quite nicely. So the first six rows are the actual percentages, and they should be familiar to you. What I want you to just look at very briefly is the line that says maximum EI. Okay. So the maximum EI says that for each of those categories, this is the worst number you could get. Okay. And to be frank, how do you get that? You essentially have an institution that comprises of Indian male. Okay. That is the worst situation you have, and you'll get that as the maximum equity index. So if you're approaching 145.7, that is the situation you don't want to be in. You want to approach zero. Okay? Or in our case, we've actually set up a particular tolerance which we call the zero quintile of around 5.3. So if your equity index is within between 0 and 5.3, then you really are where you should be. The other thing we've done is we've actually split up these ranges into different quintiles. It just makes it a little easier because you'll see that in the subsequent slide I'm going to present lots of numbers to you, and that's not really going to give you a good sense of what is happening.
But when you realize that some of these fall into the different quintiles, you realize exactly where they are and how close they are to the natal demographics, and you can see how much work they have to do. Okay. Before going to the second, we just did a quick snapshot using the data that was publicly available. We looked at the National Assembly. The equity index there was just 17.8. The National Council of Provinces is much worse than that, 31.7. Of course, the executive, the cabinet, does the best of the lot at 16.5. Okay? And I repeat, the smaller the number, the better you are. Unfortunately, if you look at HESA, which is the vice chancellor of the 23 universities, it has an equity index of 55. Okay, which, so all the others, the first two are in the first quintile, the National Council of Provinces in the second, the vice chancellor is actually in the third quintile. So that is of particular concern. Okay, so these are the slides now that give you a whole lot of data, but I'll try to unpack it and give you a little bit of a summary. Okay. So what I have here is the data for the 23 universities. Ignoring the first column, the next three columns talk about enrollment, thereafter graduation, and the final three columns talk about what we call the efficiency. So the first column of data, of numbers, talks about the racial equity index for enrollment. So essentially gives you the racial profile of the different universities. And you can see that has quite a range. It starts with a very good 7.9, which is almost at 5.3, which is where we want to be. That's the Central University of Technology in the Free State. And you have a very poor 93.1 at the University of Stellenbosch, okay, which is in the fourth quintile. If you look at gender, this is perhaps the most striking thing of the study. In spite of what we may think, we actually do pretty well when it comes to gender in higher education. Much better than in terms of race. So there the range is from a low of 0.6, which is 20 University of Technology, UCT, and Stellenbosch. They all have 0.6, so that's excellent. The worst is Northwest University, which is 20.4, but again, that isn't as bad when you compare to the range for the racial equity indices. If you put those together, you come up with a composite, which is the overall equity index, which takes both the race and the gender into account. And there, that again has quite a range from 10.2 all the way down to 93.1. So that's just with regards to enrollment. You can do the same sort of analysis for the graduation, so the next three columns. Okay. Again, quite a range for the racial equity index from 7.5 all the way up to 93.2. Once again, the gender profile is better, but just by briefly looking at the numbers, you can see that it is not as good as the gender profile for the enrollment. Okay. And then finally, we have the overall graduation year, which is a composite of both of those. So having looked at this data, the question is, what can you say about this? Okay. Well, the first thing we did was subtract the enrollment equity indices from the graduation equity indices to see if we're actually improving the profile of our students as they come through the system. And unfortunately, we're not doing that. It's actually the other way around. Okay. Except for three universities, that's Central University of Technology, 20 University of Technology, and Laval University of Technology, all the other universities have a worse graduating class profile than the enrolled class. And so what is essentially happening in the sector is we're enrolling a particular profile of students, we're graduating a different profile of students. And that is obviously something that is of great concern to all of us. This graphic here just takes the overall indices into account, and so not disaggregated for race and gender, and it shows you where the universities stand in terms of the quintiles. And you can see almost half the universities, both for graduation and enrollment, are in the first quintile, and so that's a pleasing situation. But as you move up, you see there's a significant number of universities also in the second, some in the third, and the University of Stellenbosch sits alone in the fourth quintile. Okay, both with regards to its graduation and its enrollment. Okay, so that gives you a nice snapshot of where the sector is with regards to students. If you now look at the staff situation, so here this is the different HEMIS categories of staff, and again you have quite a wide range, and for those of you who are trying to work out what those different colored bands are, those are the top five research-producing universities in terms of art. Okay, just to show you where they stand in the overall analysis. Okay. So what you can see in here is, as I said, again, quite a wide range. If we want to pick on a particular university, for example, if we take the University of Pretoria, overall, its equity index is 67.3. If it starts to unpack it at the different levels, it has a serious concern with its executive because that equity index is 93.4. For its instructional or academic staff, it's 92.8, again very high in the fourth quintile. An improvement for the non-professional administrative staff, also an improvement for its service staff. I'm using the wrong line. But the service staff is really quite remarkable because that drops all the way down to 30.8. So if the University of Pretoria is actually analyzing its data and it says, hang on, we're not too bad with the service staff, it will then put emphasis into the other categories, like its executive, like its instructional staff, and also its technical staff and crafts and services. So this is what's useful about this tool. You can now use it to refine your analysis and focus your intervention at your universities. Okay? And so you can do this for a variety of universities. Of the research universities, for overall staff, the University of Bartelsrand has the best profile. When it comes to academic staff, the University of KwaZulu-Natal has the best profile. But best is relative. Those numbers are still very high when we look at where we want to go. That is just the overall equity indices, and so what we also did was unpack the racial and gender equity indices just for the overall staff as well as for the academic staff. And if you look at those profiles as well, you can see that without doubt that we do better in terms of gender than we do in terms of race. Okay. But once again, we do much better overall for all our staff as opposed to for our academic staff. We have serious concerns with regards to what is happening with regards to our overall, our academic staff, especially when you look at the racial equity indices, where we have great challenges in that regard. If you want to look at where we are sitting in terms of the profiles, you can see that, unlike the slide with regards to students, where quite a few universities are sitting in the first quintile, here we have just a fraction. Here are about a quarter of the universities sitting in the first quintile, and they're only with regards to some indices, not with regards to both the academic and the overall staff. Okay. And we very quickly move into the second, a large number, in fact the majority, I would say, in terms of percentages, will be in the third quintile, and we still have quite a few in the fourth quintile. It's rather concerning to see the number of universities that now have equity indices in the fourth quintile. It's something that needs particular attention. So this sort of analysis was just in terms of the actual numbers, the percentages, the demographic percentages. The question one often hears is, well, once you transform, you're always going to have an issue with regard to quality. And so we looked at the productivity of the higher education sector and weighted it for equity. And we did it in the following way. So the second column, this looks at the 2011 weighted research output. So this is the total research output for all the universities as reported by the department itself. And you can see the rankings. Pretoria is number one in the country, followed by Cape Town, Stellenbosch, UKZ, and then Wits. That's just in terms of output. Okay. However, if you take this number and divide it by the equity index of the staff at the institution, you get a very different picture. So now we look at what we call equity-weighted research output. This is the number one university in the country with an output of, or a weighted research output of 36.4. UKZN is 2, Pretoria is 3, but notice that Fort Hare comes in at number 4 now. Okay? UNIPA is number 5. UCT, which was number 2 in terms of output, drops to number 6. Okay? Stellenbosch, which was number 3 in terms of output, drops to number 9 in the country. So I think that is really quite revealing when you actually look at the equity-weighted research output. That was with regards to the overall staff, but one can argue that, in fact, the only producers of knowledge in the university are the academic staff. So instead of weighting with regards to overall staff, you weight with regards to just the academic staff. If you do that, the numbers drop further, unfortunately. UKZN is number 1, followed by Pretoria. UCT comes back into the top 5 at number 3. Wits is now number 4, Interestingly, UNISA maintains its position at number 5. Okay? Stellenbosch still doesn't get back into the top 5. So what that tells you is that in spite of the great output at the University of Stellenbosch, its poor equity profile really doesn't allow it to have a decent equity-weighted research output. And so that, I think, is really quite instructive. Okay. The final column talks about the per capita output, and I'll come to that in a minute. Another way of looking at this, this data, instead of just looking at the weighted research output, is to actually plot your equity index against your output. Okay. So this gives us a nice scatter plot where in the bottom left-hand corner, you have institutions that have good equity but poor output. In the top left-hand corner, you have institutions with poor equity and poor output, so we don't want anyone to be there. In the top right, it is poor equity but good output. And in the bottom right, you have good equity and good output. There's only one institution there. It's, of course, UKZN, but it is just creeping into that quadrant. If we really want to analyze this critically, that is an area of concern. We want more institutions to be in that particular quadrant. Having said that, once we look at this particular plot, we can focus on the universities like Free State, UJ, Northwest, UNISA, and WITS. All of them are clustered around the center and have the potential to move into the bottom right quadrant. Okay. And so now that they have this sort of analysis, they can look at tweaking their mission to ensure that they move across. So this plot looks at overall weighted productivity. One could also argue that the smaller institutions lose out in terms of this analysis because their output is necessarily going to be less than the others. So we then move to looking at, again, the equity profile against now the per capita research output. What is very pleasing about this is that we essentially have no universities in the upper left-hand quadrant, the quadrant that has poor equity and poor output. Okay. Northwest is just on the borderline, but it is close enough that we don't have to worry about it very much. In a quadrant where we want all the universities to be in the bottom right, UKZN maintains its position just inside. UWC just moves into that quadrant, but Fort Hare does very well, and it really entrenches itself in the bottom right-hand quadrant. So those three universities, one would argue, have been able to solve the or answer the critics with regards to transforming the universities while maintaining quality output. Okay. And other universities, we believe, have a lot to learn from those three universities. So what I presented to you thus far was based on 2011 staff data. What we did next was we actually wrote to the 20 universities, because we ignored the 300 administration, and asked them for the data with regards to their senates and councils. Okay. And this is the ranking that we have for you. UKZN is number 1 in the country, and the University of Stellenbosch is number 20 in the country with regards to the profile of the council. If you look at senate, you have Mangosuthu University of Technology being number 1 in the country, and we have the University of Free State being number 20 in the country. Okay, so quite a wide range. There are a couple of things to note in this analysis. Firstly, for the first time, we now have equity indices in the fifth quintile, okay, which is the worst quintile to be in, okay, as far away from the national demographics as you can get. The other thing to notice is if you look at the UKZN data, you'll notice the second number in brackets. We were able to get the data for the institution in 2004 when we merged. So at the time, our council had an equity index of 44.6, which was in the second quintile. Our senate had an equity index of 89.2, which was in the fourth quintile. However, in 2013, 9 years later, that has improved to 14.1 for council and to 46.4 for the senate. So it shows that this can be done. One can make significant improvements in the equity index, provided one is motivated and one is focused to do this. The other interesting result that we had was that there is a direct correlation between the size of senates and the equity indices. Essentially, the larger the senate, the worse the equity index is to be. And that perhaps is also a lesson for universities in terms of restructuring their senates. Councils, of course, are fixed because it's legislated, and you cannot change the size of council. There are approximately 30 people there. But these people are there by selection, by nomination. And one would argue that there really isn't a compelling reason for one to have such poor equity indices for the vast majority of the consuls in the country. Okay. This slide again shows you how dire the situation is. You just have three universities that have indices in the first quintile, a lot more in the second, some in the third, far too many in the fourth, and as we said, two indices in the first quintile, which is of great concern. The reason this is of great concern is as follows. You would think that the council would be the driver of transformation for the entire university, while the Senate will be the driver of transformation for the academic staff. And one would argue that if your Senate has a particular profile, then there's an incentive for the rest of the university to improve its profile in line with the Senate. The same is true of the council. If we look at the top five research producing universities in the country, and compare the overall profile to the council profile, you compare the academic profile to the Senate profile, it makes for some rather stark analysis. Okay. If we take, for example, the University of Stellenbosch, its council index is worse than its overall staff. Its Senate index is again worse than its academic staff. So if the institutions that are supposed to be, or rather the bodies that are supposed to be driving transformation, aren't transformed themselves, we don't expect them to have much of an effect on the rest of the sector. Okay. The others, we believe we have a budget at UKZN. UCT just has it right with regards to a council that's better than its overall staff, but it certainly needs more work in that regard. Okay. So that was with regards to the snapshots. We all looked at the data of 2007 and the data for 2011, both for the students and for the staff. And using those two data points, we were able to project how long it would take for the different universities to reflect the national demographics. Okay. So if you look at enrollment, okay, the 2007 data is in the second column, the 2011 is in the third column, and the fourth column talks about the number of years we have to wait for these universities to reflect national demographics. Now, firstly, you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, five institutions with negative. Okay? So when it's negative, ignore the actual number, but worry about the fact that it's negative. They're moving in the wrong direction. Okay? They're not moving towards the national demographics, they're moving away from it. Those institutions need to look very seriously at where they're going with regards to the enrollment. For the other institutions, they're on the right path, but with the exception of a few, they're taking far too long. The University of Johannesburg only needs another 6 years. The Central University of Technology only needs another 8 years. On the other extreme, you've got Northwest University with 250 years. You've got Cape Peninsula University of Technology with 170 years. 213 years for the University of West Cape. Okay, so that just gives you an idea of how slow the pace transformation is. With regards to the graduating class, we again have four universities now with negative indices, so they're going in the wrong direction. For those with positive indices, Stellenbosch is 226 years. We have 217 years for the University of Limpopo. On the other extreme, just 7 years for the Central University of Technology, 10 years for the University of Johannesburg. When we look at staff, the situation in terms of moving in the wrong direction is a little better. We only have three institutions that are going in the wrong direction with regards to the overall staff. But those who are moving in the right direction, you've got UCT with a high of 382 years for its overall staff to transform. You've got 261 years for the University of Stellenbosch. On the other extreme, only 8 years for UNISA, 10 years for Vale University of Technology. For the academic staff, all the institutions are moving in the right direction except for Northwest University. It's the only one that has a worse profile in 2011 versus 2007. Okay. And again, we have quite a range. Vale University of Technology, we just need to wait 7 years. We need to wait 11 years for UNISA and 12 for Limpopo. At another extreme, okay, you've got 371 years for the University of Pretoria, 253 years for the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Among the research universities, I commented earlier that UKZN has the best profile for its academic staff, but if you compare it to 2007, there hasn't been much movement. And as a result, while today it looks good, it's going to take far too long for us to get to the national demographics. So just a quick summary of the changes from 2007 to 2011. Interestingly, there were no real difference in the benchmarks when we looked at the 2011 and the 2001 demographics. Importantly, there was a significant improvement in the student enrollment and graduation profile. Okay, so we're moving in the right direction. There was significant improvement in the overall, the executive, the academic staff, the non-professional admin, and the specialized support staff profile. So again, for those categories, we're again moving in the right direction. But we were not really doing much with regard to the service staff, the technical staff, and the trade and the craft staff. Okay. So for most of the indices, we're moving in the right direction, but as we've just shown, the pace is not good enough. If you want to actually look at the individual institutions, five of them have a worse student enrollment profile, so they're going in the wrong direction. Four of them have a worse student graduation profile, again going in the wrong direction. And three have a worse staff profile in 2011 versus 2007. And as I said, Northwest University is the only one with the worse instructional or academic staff profile. So we go back to the earlier slide that I put up, which was the long march to transformation. As I said, for student demographics, we still have 12 years to go with regards to getting our enrollments right. If we just focus on race, we're actually doing better because that will only take 8 years. If we look at gender, though, we're going in the wrong direction, and that's something we need to address. If you look at graduation, we need 14 years overall. If we just look at the racial profile, that only takes 11 years. Again, if we look at gender, we're going in the wrong direction, and we need to give that some attention. With regards to the overall staff demographics, as I said, it was 43 years for that. If we only focus on race, it's going to be 43 years. Gender is going in the wrong direction, but that's not too much of a problem because the actual number is small. It's around 2.4. So we essentially have sorted out gender with regards to our overall staff demographics. If you take the academic staff, just the racial profile, it's going to take us 42 years to get that right. For the gender profile, that's going to take us another 17 years. So a lot more work needs to be done with regards to that. So in summary, as was mentioned, even at the start by the Deputy Minister, this equity index is really the first quantitative measure to determine equity profile. Okay? It can be used to measure transformation by looking at the pace of change over the years, and can also be used to drive transformation by now setting particular targets with respect to equity index. We believe it's a fresh look to support the goals of the three pieces of legislation I mentioned earlier, and we believe it will support and aid the work of the Transformation Oversight Committee. In terms of driving transformation, just as a basis for some discussion in terms of going forward, we believe that it can have a direct impact on the six-year enrollment planning. We are currently negotiating with the department to determine our enrollment plans for the next 6 years. Given that we know what the equity indices are for the 23 universities, one could suggest introducing targets of improving the enrollment and the graduation equity indices for every university, either by one quintile, so moving from, say, quintile 4 for Stellenbosch to quintile 3, or by 20%, whichever is better. Okay? One could do the same sort of thing with regards to the overall staff profile, urging universities to improve its profile by moving the equity index a better of 20% of one quintile, and do the same with regards to the academic staff equity index. Okay. All of this, of course, can only be successful if, in the new funding framework, we actually start funding targeted transformation. And the final point that I'd like to make is that, regardless of the indicator that one wants to use, if we incorporate the equity index, you can always weight those indicators with equity. And it's the first time one is able to do that. Thank you, colleagues. That's a list of people that have helped us and the references for the articles that have and will appear. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Gangler. Prof. Mahoba, I don't know whether you still need to wrap up on that before I open up for discussion.
No, I think we need to open up for discussion. I think we came here to discuss. And other people can comment.
Okay. But before any discussions, if I can just know, how was the, when you shared this information with the institutions, with all the 23 universities, how was the reception of this report? You know, I don't know whether I understand you well, but can you just put us on that meeting where these universities were there, you were sharing this information? How was the mood on that day?
I think the report was welcomed. A number of universities saw that this was a tool that they could use. What you would have noticed in all the data that we presented, the university that's at the bottom of the heap in almost every single indicator is the University of Stellenbosch. And the delegates from the University of Stellenbosch welcomed us. They said, we finally have a tool to be able to go back to the university and show the university exactly how bad the situation is and help us to move forward. So largely supportive and welcoming. There were a few vice chancellors who weren't as excited about the results. We did hear the normal response of course we'll be able to improve our equity profile, just give us the people with the right profile and we'll appoint them, which of course is a very backward way of looking at this. But by and large, it was really very welcomed.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that report. Before I open up to the honourable members, let me give now an opportunity to the member of the committee to make the additional comments.
Just one comment here. My name is Dombisi, member of the TOC. And I just want to, on the latter question you asked, that I think the only university that was beginning to question the stats, it was the University of Northwest, which we clarified. However, there are a lot of challenges. I think you can see on the EBT index the number of challenges in that area. But we were surprised by the University of Stellenbosch delegates who agreed with us that indeed they are having a serious challenge, which we all have to ask. Thank you.
Honourable members, I'm opening this chance for you.
I just wanted to add that at the meeting that we had, there was also a cautioning around us looking at the equity index in a more holistic way, and that the qualitative indicators needed to be assessed as well, that you couldn't just have a straightforward quantitative analysis. And so I think the committee is looking at a more balanced approach because it will be in the detail in terms of the analysis. Thanks.
Honourable Panga, I've noted you. Okay. Oh, you're still preparing?
Yeah.
Okay, Honourable members, any comments on the report? Yes. Honourable Bosman, I've noted you. You can come.
Chair, thank you. I think we must thank this committee for the work that they've done. I think it is necessary that we more or less have an idea of what is happening in the country and where we are going. And this is absolutely, and you're right to say that it's a tool that can be used for the people to measure themselves and to get themselves in a position to adjust and to, how shall I say, to go into a direction that we all want to go in. I just want to, and I think the last comment that was made on the other side there is obviously universities are quite a unique situation that they have their own status, if I can put it that way. They have their own standards and they want to turn out the best quality of people, and which we need in the country obviously is good qualified people to take the economy forward, to take the country forward. That is the basics of any country's development. I would like to maybe ask two questions. First of all, we know that our basic education is not in a good shape. It does not turn out quality students. And it has a sort of a reflection or an impact, I don't know how to put it, but it has an impact on the quality and the numbers of students that are going forward to tertiary education. Can we tie the two in? Can we not have a similar situation where we can maybe look at what is given to the higher education system in terms of this? You know, to work with figures, we can interpret figures very differently, and everybody can maybe make out of it what they want. But what looks to me is if we would, we might not, let me just put it that way, we must not sacrifice quality just for the sake of transformation. Because of the fact that we need, especially in the three instances like science and math and the other subjects that is directly needed in South Africa. And I think the remark that was made on the other side is we should maybe also take that into account when calculating the transformation system. The availability, obviously, of training staff, the quality of them, and we should not sacrifice. And I know it's difficult when you work with figures to bring that factor in. So it is maybe an issue that we will have to maybe in the long term work into a sort of a formula to say that, look, we will have to maybe in some way sacrifice some of these transformation targets to maintain quality education on the other end. So just a remark and maybe a question on how can we sort of tie the throughput right from the start to the university level through this specific exercise that they've done.
My comment around qualitative analysis was not that transformation would compromise quality. I really want to make that point. And if you look at the University of Witwatersrand and the research indicator with the equity indicator, it shows that the university has done very well and it's number one. And for me, the issue is that you can have equity and quality, and I think we're actually beginning to see it. There is no compromise. What the important thing to note is that the University of the Witwatersrand invested in that. They actually put money into building equity by providing more research grants, by providing more support to academic staff. And this is what I meant about the data in the detail. One actually needs to unpack how some objectives were achieved. And so the point I'm making is not that it's compromised quality. I'm saying we need a qualitative analysis to go with the quantitative analysis, because I don't stand by the view that transformation compromises quality at all. I want to make that very clear. Thanks.
Chair, I think let us appreciate the research. It put it in the open, the crisis we have in our education in relation to the agenda for transformation. But firstly, I would want to ask maybe the professors. In terms of the data that they have collected, the tools that the universities are using to monitor the transformation in KTAS, do you think the problem is there? I'll give you an example. One university as a student at that would have, every time we have a council meeting, only when we have a council meeting, an equity rotation that we only get that document. We don't even look at that fancy. We find out after 6 months, it's only then that you see that there's one person who have been employed to address this. Council does not necessarily have time-to-time monitoring and engagement in terms of the movements in the university. Or it takes 8 months. Some other countries sit twice or twice. You understand. That's what I'm saying. The tools the universities are using to monitor this equity, do you think are adequate enough to show that the movement in terms of that? Because that university as a student will raise this issue, that we cannot monitor transformation only through numbers after 6 to 8 months. It can't be. The councils
do not reflect the extent of these changes in universities. They appointed a person who has no powers, a transformation officer, who accounts to a very junior officer who does not speak Ukhansi. That's what has happened in this university, our student. Mechanisms that universities use. It shows that lack of commitment. I don't want to tell you that. I'm a bit happy myself with this kind of report because it vindicates student leaders who have raised that the more commitment at universities in as far as transformation, both transformation of academic staff, senior management, and student enrollment. Students have raised this, and I think if they were here, it's unfortunate that we did not invite them. But these issues that we have raised, because some of the things, you can listen to the professors, they're not tangible. It's not something that is easy to catch, because it's in the system of the university. Now, the professor puts it very nicely. They say that there's no funding for this. There are no... I remember myself, we wanted, what is this thing? Chief Vice Chancellor Finance. I was in the committee to appoint. They said, no. We said, go and add hand. They said, they came back. They said, we looked all over South Africa. We couldn't find a Vice Chancellor Finance who would be capable. Hey, we said, no. They brought another Vice Chancellor here. We said, no. In South Africa, then why can't we go to Africa? He said, we have to fill this post. The point of commitment, Chairperson, it's not there from universities in relation to this aspect. What they raise the issue of funding. And that government should fund this. I don't think it should only be government funding. The professor there, Pavenda, spoke about institutional commitment to fund like this. We're from Grace Fortunate. What is saying, we're told at Grace, that they have this target, they commit to fund on research, they even put the chairs to fund these things. Other universities do not do that. The Vice Chancellor told us about government. When we met with HISA, they said the problem is that young black people do not want to go to universities. They want to go to government because of salaries. The point is that, again, universities do not invest to fund a transformation. Therefore, I'm saying, Chair, as government, we should put more money. There are universities such as Stellenbosch, universities, the Nelson Mandela University, Rhodes, and many other universities, who are financially stable. But you see in this research that there's no commitment even for their part to do something about it. But the country cannot wait for 43 years and 261 years. It's an indictment, really, that to deal with these issues, we have to wait for quite a long time. It speaks to the issues of actual project of transformation, whether we'll achieve it or not. But I like the issue that they are raising, that I hope that when they're talking about the funding model framework, they're not only looking at government funding formula. They must also talk about the commitment of institutions to invest in this kind of transformation. But from our part, as government, we should be looking deeper to what also the professors spoke about, building a new generation of academics. What can we do as government to make sure that we also create the environment that we address the issue of inequities to make these universities effective. But you speak about Nelson Mandela, Forte, and on student profiles. That it's worse. What does it mean? Is it what? I don't understand. What does it mean? They are worse in terms of student profile. In terms of diversity, in general, or what? What? I'm a bit confused. If you can explain that to me, Professor. NFAS, the intervention of NFAS, meaning it's not tilting things in terms of student profile, some of the and then if it's not, we thought that the injection we put as government would address this. Are we not even closer in terms of what is, with the funding we have? What do you mean, and what could tell to Professor? Thank you very much.
Can I just add something on what Honorable Pana has said? To add another angle today. Is it true that, maybe from what we have gathered, is it also true that from South Africa, South Africans, we don't get enough people with the necessary skills that are needed, you know, to take up even these positions, these professional positions in such that way, in such that we even have to go out of the country when you look at the staff profile. What lessons have you learned, and what is it that you can share with us when it comes to that, the skills that we have within the country? How far are we getting there as South Africans? Or we are mostly relying on other countries, African countries, and even abroad. Honorable, I think that the next one.
Thank you. Yeah, we should appreciate this report because it does show us where we are, and so that we can be able to go where we want to. I'm curious about this Stellenbosch University. I don't know what is behind that. If somebody can say something. And I'm looking at this long walk. This long walk seems to be very long. I don't know whether the long walk, the 43 years, 12 years, 14 years, is based on what is. We're saying if nothing happened, this is what would. And having said that, I don't know whether there's somebody somewhere out there who's saying these are the possibilities. If you want to shorten 43 to 33, you must do A, B, C. Is there a way of using this formula or even allowing the universities on a year-to-year to be able to assess themselves? If you want that to happen, who is supposed to do what? So that we don't say 2007, 2011. So that we can, is there a way of maybe even from government sector saying, as a council, when you are reporting, you must be reporting on this, using this formula, so that we assess and judge you on base of this. Is there a way of, as I say again, I'm repeating myself on this one, some pointers to say, Stellenbosch, you are where you are. If you want to get there, it will be expected of you to do A, B, C, D. And therefore, even as a control committee, we can say when we go around, we take this report, we put the institution where we was, and we're able to say, where are you now? In order for that to happen, what is it that as a government or as a portfolio committee need to do? Do we need to put a law? Do we need to legislate for somebody to do that? Because this is a very gloomy picture. Thank you.
I might be repeating questions that have been raised by honorable members. But for purposes of saying what I want to say, I'm going to raise the questions anyway. My first question is, what pace of transformation is creating this kind of a scenario that we see? Yes, if that is sensible. But if that does not make sense mathematically, we can leave it. I'm saying this because somewhere it is said that some universities need to be assisted. How do you assist somebody who is not doing anything? Number two, I'm sure Prof has also asked this question, but I want to put it this way. What will have to be done on a massive scale to bring all the elements of transformation to right in 10 years rather than 200 years? Lastly, I suspect that some of these, some heads of these institutions have something against the constitution of the country. And then I would like to hear what the views of academics in South Africa about the constitution generally, because I would imagine that all universities have statutes of their own, and maybe those are respected more than the constitution of the country. What are the issues these universities are raising? Because the country has a constitution and everyone abides by it. Tells you, if that makes sense again.
Chairperson, mine is just a point of understanding. You know, I did arithmetic, I didn't do science school. This on the gender, on page 18, you talk of gender. Gender is broken twice. It's male or female. But if you just generalize and say gender, I need some understanding, please. Thanks.
Sure, thanks. Just a few, perhaps asking some of the questions, almost pointing to those raised already, but perhaps using slightly different dimension, just for us to get the overall response to it. The first would be that I'm wondering whether the team or committee did reconcile what they found with what is likely to happen in the country. Let me give an example. If it is said that in a decade's time, the majority of academics will be exiting the system, most probably white academics, and we still think transformation in that regard will take 43 years on this or the other. Did we reconcile that fact? Because to me, it was going to mean that that on its own is a window of opportunity to redress and transform. Now, I'm just citing that as an example to say, what was the brief? Was the committee able to reconcile such facts? Go to that particular extent and say, also, that was going to be my second question, was that I don't see very clear recommendations. Yes, it does indicate that there's supposed to be movement on this, movement on that, and so on and so on, which we appreciate. But I'm saying, unless it was not their brief, to then say, we think the following needs to happen. Clearly so that from here, everybody knows what will be able to be done. The third chair to me will be that do we have an enforcement tool or not? And I'm raising that based on the fact that universities, by their very nature, would raise a lot of things, including institutional autonomy, academic freedom, and this and that, some of which is to just say they've got latitude to do their own things without anyone having to dictate any pace with regard to any of whatever they are actually faced with. And I'm just saying, do we have anything that would, other than their own institutional mechanisms, or this that will drive transformation in-house from outside? Can we then say on the basis of this institution we are at fault given the period that we were supposed to have transformed and so on, and therefore we think the following needed to happen? The last, very last chair, the issue of remuneration. To some degree, Honorable Banga referred to it,
that perhaps we have got very few African or black academics who stay in the universities owing to issues of remuneration attracted by opportunities in government and so on. Now, was this sort of issue looked at to say indeed we're facing that as a challenge, or it remains because unless something has been researched sort of or studied, it remains rumor. Because you just look at those you see vacating space in the institutions of higher learning, and they happen to be your friends or whatever, they are now in government, you then generalize and say many people are leaving. When that has not been researched, you can't say a proportion of people have moved from academic institutions to government institutions and so on. I'm just saying, do we have factual information researched which tells us that yes, this is playing a major role, and we think there's a problem, because it's not everybody who moves, apparently. You have got those who are supposed to assist transformation staying in these institutions. Are the others moving because they are young, and the old academic staff remaining because they are comfortable in these institutions, or what exactly explains this scenario? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Maybe I need to give also a chance to Chief Mabizele. There are questions that have been raised that are directed to the department itself before I come back to the committee. Prof. Mabizele, even the mandate, you know, there's so much that we need to get from the side of the department now before we go back to our discussion. Can I give you this?
Yes, thank you very much, ma'am. You will be surprised that we also have questions of our own. but certainly from the department, I think maybe as a comment before I raise some of the issues I noted here, as a comment, this is something that we needed in the department, because we have always been saying that transformation is not just about the numbers. It's not just about how many blacks now are in the system as compared to pre-1994. And also the issue about the higher levels, you know, those who make it to postgraduate level. The comment made earlier, for instance, about those who come from the rest of the continent in order to make up numbers of the blacks in the system. Those are happening in the system. And the department, and the department is aware, and certainly the issue of autonomy again always creeps in those issues, and that is being dealt with. Yesterday, the minister met with the chairs of councils. They had agreed that they will meet twice a year, and this was the second meeting for the year. And the minister suggested to the chairs that the issue of transformation should be a standing item in the council chairs, in the council meetings. So I think that answers that question as to what the department is doing about this, and also how the institutions carry this matter forward. In fact, in that meeting, Prof. Mahova might think that this is the last of the presentations that he's making, but the minister also suggested that the council chairs also should receive this presentation. They haven't had it as yet. The chairs only. Now, then the second issue, partly a question that gets raised is the use of the population data against which calculation is made, that is the numbers of those in the system, in the higher education system, whether you're talking enrollments, for instance, or staff or academic studies, against the numbers of in the population. And the criticism, in fact, I was looking at that, and I don't know how much of that is accurate. The criticism has been that the number of the numbers in the population that are being used are not necessarily against the age group that is that you would find at the universities or the equivalent age group, you know, 18 to 24, which is usually international measurement of those that are supposed to be at the universities. And then the I think the other issue which was raised by the honourable members is that of recommendations. I think also in the workshop that we were at, where this presentation was made, the issue of recommendations from the study was raised, and one such recommendation, for instance, which is a thorn in the flesh in the South African system, is that of the participation rate, which also relates again to the previous question I raised, or the issue that I raised. And that is the number of, for instance, the number of blacks, or in this case Africans, participating in the system is somewhere around 13% compared to about 51% of whites in the system. And that is the number of each cohort race group against their counterparts in the population. So it's still very low, as much as we have close to about 70% of blacks in the system, but the participation rate is still very low. And in fact, generally, the participation rate of all of us in the country is low, compared to, first of all, they would want it to be, but secondly, also with the countries that are doing well in terms of their economies. The Asian countries, for instance, would find the participation rate around 21% up to about 28%, and ours is about 18%. We're struggling on that one. But of course, then the issue also is not only just to look at the participation rate, but to look at it also in the context of transformation. And again, the issue of postgraduates there becomes very important. So those are the issues, Madam Chair. I don't know whether you regard them as questions, but certainly one of them is a response to the issues that were raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can I take Ndlovu at the back there, then I'll come to you, Prof.
Hi. Ngokube ndithi yinkosi yamahlubi bendingasuba yinkosi yam because andililo ihlubi. Those who don't understand, that's trying to indicate that I'm not part of the hlubi clan in the country. And therefore this is not my chief. Ngumawawa lo mntu. Kumbinga umbolokoshi into mntwana. Ngazihambi zona. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. I just want to reflect on some of the questions and comments. I think it's proper that we do before the mathematics formula comes in. I'm a member of the Committee, by the way, and I'm Mbuyo from, that's my name. Just to start at the end with the point that was raised about considering the issue of remuneration amongst academics. Most of what is said is anecdotal. There has not been a thorough research done about salaries of academics and salaries generally in the country. Currently, Higher Education South Africa, that is HISA, is conducting a study, and that study will yield results by the first quarter of next year. The study is about all categories of employees in institutions of higher learning, and not just comparing amongst institutions, but also looking at what equivalent people may be paid in public sector, if you talk about directors, chief directors, etc. So that study will be up next year, and therefore most of this debate will be now done in the background of that type of research. So that's one point I wanted to give first. Then the second point that I thought I should just refer to is on the first question, which was the reception in the meeting that was raised by the Honourable Chair. Most of it has been answered, but just to also add, if it was not clear, that some institutions were challenging the findings and saying that they will have to go back and work out exactly in comparison to what they have, what the findings are in the research that has been done. I want to just reflect on that slightly because there was a mention of the West Institution, as one of the honorable members said. I don't think as we have actually gone back to the UF that I said you must UFH and UFS that I said you must raise, because there's a contradiction between what you reflected on the enrollment at the University of Fort Hare and what you say ultimately about it being amongst the worst five. And I think instead of H, and I raise that point, I think you should go back to that. You still have the H instead of the S. Port Prof UFS. So that's something that we need to do. And in spite of answering you, that some of the issues that were raised in that meeting, that the researchers must go back and look at some of these issues that were raised by the people in that meeting. And ultimately, as said earlier on, we all agreed that the report must be incorporated into the Transformation Oversight Committee report. It's one of the tools that has not been used in the country. It's a new tool that could be used. And I think, just to reflect that, this is just one aspect of transformation. We're talking about equity. It's not the whole of transformation as applied in the white paper on the transformation of higher education in South Africa. It's got more parameters than what we're talking about here today. So we are still limited by one aspect now, and that is equity issues. Of course, there's a reflection on research, as indicated there in the report. What transformation is happening in research in the country? You'll have seen that most of the institutions that are doing poorly in terms of total research output are universities of technology whose focus is not really much of research. And secondly, previously disadvantaged institutions in the country when it comes to total, and then the small size that Cass referred to. So that is a reflection of transformation as well when you talk about transformation when it comes to PIs, previously disadvantaged institutions. But we did raise the point that totals don't reflect the whole picture. Is the per capita that reflects better. Because if you take small size and big size, you can't say this is number one, that is number last. In terms of size, if you have got 3,000 researchers and another institution has got 1,000 researchers, you can't say the totals must be the same. So you can't rank according to that particular index. Now, coming back to some of the issues again that have been raised, The question about South Africa having sufficient skills amongst academics to supply all universities and profiles of institutions in terms of international and national people. Generally speaking, higher education is very internationalized, if you go to countries outside the continent. You will find almost the same picture. In terms of international and national. Many countries have got international senior academics in their profiles. Our picture, and we have to come back to our own context, our picture has got that first, but we do aim to produce more locals as much as possible. And there is a submission that has been made, which has found its way actually into the National Planning Commission's report on a study that was done by HISA on the production of a new generation of academics and scholars in South Africa. And fortunately, the National Plan has included that in their report, and almost definitely there will be means and ways of addressing that for South Africa. We've got low numbers in the first instance. We can cannot export as the other countries that are importing do. So even those that we produce are still far lower in the country. So I'm not saying that we should not consider that aspect. We have to do as much as possible, but just bear in mind as we do that even international phenomenon, that universities are very internationalized, and it's probably healthy. I'm not saying that will be dominated by internationals, but it's probably healthy to have that exchange, because if you have only ideas which are based in the country, reproducing themselves, you are not going to diversify in the way in which we think and do things. So we must bear that in mind as we move forward. The third point, yes, the issue about the constitution and making sure that people don't oppose the constitution, that was raised quite strongly in the meeting, that transformation is a constitutional obligation in our context. The issues of equity. And therefore, even without being forced, if we are aligning ourselves to the constitution, we will be moving far faster than we have moved in terms of our transformation in this country. And I am not going to say that some are opposed to the constitution. Everybody shouts constitution when they talk, and whether they do it or not, it's a different matter. But we did raise the point, actually, that we should not be selective about the constitution. Going around and saying we've got one of the best constitutions when we're talking about issues that suits a particular sector. We should say it is the best constitution, and we should do it in all respects, every aspect of the constitution. Lastly, at this stage, yes, the issue of numbers and the qualitative issues, not the quality issues, qualitative issues that were raised by my colleague in the TOC, Nazima. We all are aware that mechanical and social issues fare differently in terms of focus. And I think Cass made a reference to that when he talked about the distance between Cape Town and Kimberley and Polokwane and Kimberley. If you have to move through Johannesburg to reach Kimberley, you'll be faced with more traffic than you'd have from Cape Town to Kimberley. And therefore, much as the distance is the same, you may not be able to move with the same speed reaching there. But at the same time, once you realize that you're going to move through Johannesburg, and it is going to take you 30 hours to move to Kimberley, just for argument's sake, you devise means of saying, I want to be there within 15 hours instead of 30 hours. And then you strategize to be able to traverse Johannesburg and all other areas. So the social issues, that's what I'm referring to. It's not like hitting a billiard ball. But you know that if you hit this ball, it's going to hit that one, and the angle in which it hits it is going to make it fall into the hole. It's more nuanced and more sophisticated than that. And we can jump quickly, or we can delay it longer, depending on social circumstances and economic circumstances in our country. And therefore, we need to, just like the 10 years that was talked about, use certain windows of opportunity. If you say many people are going to exit the system within such and such time, then you can say, during that time, and as far as my institution is concerned, this is the succession planning that I'm going to put in place so that you can be able to diversify the equity. So it may not be the 261 years that is reflected, but cases just talking purely if we move at the pace that we move in and with the circumstances that we are still in now, then things will move in that particular time frame. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. You know, it's very nice to sit, interesting to sit here looking at the academics when one is speaking. You can see in their faces when they don't agree with what is happening, what is saying. There was a point where I was very interested. I even wished I could request you, Prof. Mahoma, to get in some of the things that you were saying, but I said, no, let me wait. He'll get his chance to do that. But I think we're moving towards, because I think what causes us all here is to say, how do we shorten this long walk? I think that is the main concern, and we are moving towards that. Can I give to you, Simbis, your hand was up, then I come to
okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The few things that I think one needs to respond to on the especially on the legislation of this enforcement the honourable members are talking about. One of the key things that we need to share with you is that very few institutions have the what you call the transformation chart. In the all 23, not all of them are having that. So you can see the challenge that we are faced with as a committee. The only area that we need to concentrate on, I think it is our terms of reference as a committee. We are given very limited terms of reference. We don't want to be seen as the oversight committee doing other people's work. Ours is to produce, at the end of it all, the national framework for the sector. But the number of things that we are currently faced with is the challenge of non-existence or commitment by some of the institutions or transformation. I know that when you begin to challenge, like now people are pointing fingers at us and saying that we may be carrying a shambok, we're going to whip everybody. That is not our task. Our task is to show that our country is facing a very serious challenge. One other issue that is worrying is the exiting or the aging academics we're having in the country. We don't think that we're doing well in terms of producing more academics as a country, particularly African academics. We're not doing enough in that area. You find that in one institution, a particular academic from another race retire or resign. That space is not occupied by a different race to occupy that space to close the gap on transformation. We are having the challenge. We think that it is the commitment of the institutions themselves to assist us in dealing with those particular issues. The issue of graduates not having to be placed or be trained, we have a number. I think we received at the Skills Development Conference, we received a statistic that shows that about 25% of the graduates that we have in the country are not being utilized by any universities or any institution, including the private sector. If we could train and retrain those to be academics of the future in various universities, majority of them which are black, and they're sitting at home doing nothing at this stage, I think we could address that particular issue. Of a gap in terms of the race and other things. Lastly, Chiri, the other question of quality, sacrificing quality for the sake of transformation, we don't think it is correct. As a country, we need, and we don't believe that the people we are having in the country may not occupy a space where a particular race, again, could compromise quality. We have a lot of good people who can close that gap without any question and better qualified for that matter. But we have a lot of gatekeepers at the level of universities. You look at the Senate, you look at the at university councils, the equity itself in those particular two structures, it is a challenge. And as a result, you will never entrench or force transformation if that area is not addressed. We think that universities should first look at transforming first the castle and look at the level of the senate for us to minimize this long walk towards transformation. And I think we can do that, but only if we remove the gatekeepers and commit universities to a charter that the nation is actually looking for at this stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, What I also like is that more challenges are being, you know, we are getting more challenges that we are faced with as a country, but I think it's good. Let them be exposed so that all together we can see how best can we tend to them. Professor Maho.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I just want to correct a few simple scientific issues. Volume of research on its own is a good measure we don't have to take numbers or size into account. It's like measuring people's height. It's respected on its own as a quality measure of something. So I think we can improve on it. If we put it against per capita, you can then go and look for citation index, age index, and so forth, and you'll find a different measure altogether. So I think we should not delve too much into these things because there are many matrices that have not been incorporated actually to come up with what you call an absolute quadrant. I think we must avoid that. But volume of research is important, quality on its own, just like the height of an individual. Of course, you can divide it by weight and get a BMI, but you can't ignore the height of an individual as a measure of what they are in a community. So I wanted to get that clear. The second one is salaries of academics. There are two studies that have been done, one by the UN, another one by the Association of Commonwealth Universities. It has found that South African academics are the third highest paid academics in the world. I think the first is Saudi Arabia. So these studies are there. You just have to go into the internet, find them. Don't need to reinvent the wheel. We have some of the highest paid academics in the country. Equity. Lots of people, and I'm hearing here, it's equity is one aspect of transformation. It is true, but it is an important part of transformation because we live in an unequal South Africa. And to drive that, you have to deal with this equality issue. And that equality issue is measured through the equity. That's the first. Secondly, if you want to change the culture of an institution, you can't change it fundamentally without changing the equity in that institution. Because, as Keshe mentioned, if you have an institution of Indians, you will have an institution that is legitimate and autonomous. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, you can, I'm trying to address, you can have, equity is an important element of transformation. But I think the point I want to make is this. The nature of this study was to provide scientific evidence. It wasn't studied, it wasn't made because we don't have the power to make recommendations. We don't have the power to make policies. We have the power to give policymakers something to say, this is the picture, how do you provide the country with a policy framework that enables the sector to move? So if you had to ask me, why are we here? We have come here to the portfolio committee to give them a picture of what's happening in the sector that they monitor, for them to be able to come up with the better policy advice that can be refined on the basis of the scientific evidence that they can have. We cannot do that. In fact, it would be folly of us to do that. So the enforcement issues are issues of government or parliament or the Department of Higher Education, not the scientists or even, I suppose, the Transformation Oversight Committee. Now, if you wanted a way forward that is generic and some people have been looking for it, I think there has been some ideas of things that we thought could be part of the way forward. I think Keshe spelled it that we are now faced with a six-year enrollment plan. It's going to start next year. All universities are negotiating that. If we miss this opportunity of asking how does equity impact in that enrollment plan, every time you go to a university and you ask them, how are you doing it, are you having equity, it will take you to court because we are playing it for 6 years and it's going to be signed by council, it's going to be signed by vice chancellor, and it will be a contract between ourselves and the department. So if we lock ourselves in it, it's a legal contract that we can't get out of. So what we're saying is if you want to entrench equity, or you think equity is valuable as a tool, do it now rather than you're going to have to wait for 6 years. And most of you will either be retired or demented or somewhere out of the system to be able to understand and appreciate it. So the enrollment plan that is currently happening should somehow take into account that because it's an enrollment for students, it's going to be an enrollment for staff. A plan for staff in those 6 years. So that's one of the things that is very, very easy to deal with. We have also made quite clear that there are universities here, whether it's for historic reasons or what, that are not producing knowledge, that are not adding value to the quality of students that they have. Something has to be done at the policy level as how to deal with that. Otherwise, we remain with a system that produces students or people of the quality that will not take the country any forward. Is that what our government wants to do? I suspect not. We don't want to do that. So the data in the research shows us that there are such universities. What does government do? These researchers and the TOC can't do that. But it's a policy issue that you say, look, we either are not going to have this institution or we're going to do something about them to fund them more and so forth. The third thing is, in South Africa, you think you can throw money at every problem, you will not succeed. Problems of the world are not solved by money. They are solved by ideas and a determination that must be focused around the problem. And I think the portfolio committee can take that ahead with it and say, this is what we want to do. Fourthly, all universities are given a block grant by government. Okay? We receive that at the end of the year. I'll receive that at the beginning of December. I think I've had enough comments in my life. but I'll try and do it for that sake. All of us receive a block grant. There's nothing that stops the Department of Higher Education to say, devote 20 or 30% of that block grant to equity and transformation. It doesn't require a policy. It requires a directive. I mean, it's a very simple thing. And of course, that 20% will address the issue of students. It will address the issue of staff training. It requires no policy at all, just determination and a common sense to say, this is what we want to achieve. And because this is the first time this data is being presented here, there's no history as to what has been done. What we were suggesting was that maybe every institution can do this, and as part of their reporting at the end of the year to the department, they could have these things calculated for themselves and reported, and it can be followed. But as I think Chief has mentioned, there is this issue of autonomy and so forth. But I'm going to say this now, it's my last word, Chair. I've been going around the world in the last month, and I've been attending conferences where universities and the future of universities have been discussed. And there is one theme that comes up. That theme is universities or the fortunes of universities are determined by the leadership within the universities. In our country, and our government, we have never interrogated whether the quality of leadership we have at university is consistent with what we want to achieve. And that's a very important issue, because the fortunes and the misfortunes of universities are they rest in the hands of the leadership. And if somebody doesn't do that, of course all of us will plead autonomy and we will be left alone and we will mess the country for the many years. That is something that the portfolio committee needs to consider. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. I think the last part was quite important, and to share with you, it's one of the topics that we always look at as the portfolio committee when it comes to the leadership of all our institutions. But then that's the food for thought again, where we need to look at it, that issue. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members. I think the point that I'd like to make is that we've had in this country legislation on employment equity since 1998. We have the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Scorecard. There are, I think one of the honourable members raised the issue about what kind of tools do we need to monitor and evaluate our universities. Now, universities are required to do an employment equity report and to have an employment equity plan. Now, these tools have been around for a long time. So what we're seeing is, in terms of the demographics of staff, is not new. I think what Professor Mahuba and Professor Governor have pointed out is the summative assessment of the sector and where we stand currently. But what the point I really want to make is that there is a fundamental governance problem and that we can, you know, there can be as many sticks as possible, but if the governance arrangements in the sector is not put in, into place, that we're going to continue to have the problem. Now, people have raised the issue of councils. We actually need to understand what are the problems in assessing where institutions are going, what are the enabling tools that are required to support institutions to advance in terms of their profile, what kind of resources need to be put in, what kind of punishment is needed. I don't think you can just have a stick approach. I think you actually need to have a balanced approach in terms of a support and development plan. Now I think that at the level of the portfolio committee, at the level of the Department of Higher Education and Training, at the level of councils, at the level of university forums, institutional forums, which Parliament set up in terms of the Higher Education Act, which is there to monitor transformation, things aren't working as they should be. And we really need to make an assessment of what is going wrong in the system, because we have the tools. We really have the tools. The question is, do we have the capacity? And if we don't have the capacity, how are we going to build the capacity, how are we going to support, whether it's Parliament, whether it's councils, whether it's VHET, whether it's our institutions, what are we going to put in place to make sure that the capacity is there? Otherwise, you know, I've been at two universities in this country in transformation capacity, at UCT and WITS, and I can tell you, when you sit on the ground doing this work, you really get a sense of where the problems are in the universities. And while we say South African higher education is resourced, I don't agree. I think it's not resourced enough. There are huge, huge challenges. We've expanded student enrollment, but we haven't expanded staffing. We sit with a problem of students coming in unprepared, and you sit with staffing that sometimes in classes of 1,000 people, and not enough tutors in the system, not enough academic support, and the language proficiency not being there, because we sit with mostly white staff. And so this is not meant to be a lecture, Chair. It's just to say that really we need to unpack more. And I think that the ministry and the department are doing a superb job. However, we, you know, there's a need to put it together with the Department of Labor, because this year we called for employment equity reports for some of the institutions. I think only 7 have handed them in. 7, when we called for it, which means they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And if you called for the employment equity plans, which you can do because it's legislated, I would say portfolio committee, ask each institution for the employment equity plan. And let's do an analysis, because that's the tool that government has said use from 1998. Thank you, Chair.
Firstly, I didn't, people bear with me. You see, when I saw the formula the gentleman was talking about, and X1, X2, something, it reminded me why I ran away from on mathematics. Now, I'm very difficult. I'm a history student. Now, I didn't understand what the doctor was saying. It didn't change the H to S. Now, if you can...
Oh, okay.
I thought it was not another formula. If you talk to me about Karl Marx and Bismarck, I would understand that. Then, I'm still not here. Remember, I made this issue about needed clarity on where you located for today in the Nelson Mandela. And I asked, come on. Yes. The last aspect that I wanted to talk to is the issue that, Chair, I wish we had the minister. I always, when we deal with issues of this magnitude, to have the political accounting officers to be part of the sessions. For this kind of presentation. So I wish really I would get there, because there are issues even here by committee members that are being raised, such as the scope of mandate and everything. And I think I like what I think Dr. Tong also raised, that yes, the formula we are using is very important, but we should be, there are other issues that relate to social economic issues that governance and so on that we're supposed to be looking at. Because this speaks to this. The example I was making is what the man is saying now, the equity plan. These people are there. I was a student myself. There. They put the numbers there. After 6 months, it's only one person who has moved. And nobody says anything. When we start to raise a student, please, man, we have a clear plan of equity that is moving in this institution. Look at the numbers. It ended there, that debate. It ended there, that debate. Now, after more than 10 to 15 years, we're sitting here, we're talking about the thing we had to raise a long time ago. Now we should think as if something new. It has raised this issue by students. I'm well aware of this issue. Now, the professor is correct. There are regulations that are in place. There are guidelines. It's not that these things do not exist. But the point is the will to implement by universities. And the issue we should be talking about is that if ministers were here, what do we do about this? Therefore, I'm saying we need maybe to say, because doctor was also saying there are still areas where they are going to go back, even academics who are saying to go back. We need possibly a chairperson. It might not be this year, but South Africa does not end with us. That a comprehensive analysis of the transformation process in education, using this tool that we have, because this tool gives us the actual devil, the detail. But we need to contextualize it and put it broader and put this and the broader problem that universities are confronted with. I was thinking when the professor was speaking, before he was speaking, as I was speaking, we have a sport problem in this country. Once we talk about research as a problem, also the main problem of transformation of sport starts also in this level of universities. That maybe we should go deeper. Maybe we're speaking about services. Other go deeper and find out in those universities, in using this very same tool, how far are we in terms of addressing that? When are we going to achieve it? Because this tool speaks the truth. 216, I want to put it very nice, 161 years. Shocks me. It's another more than 3 to 4 generations. 43 years, including the 20 years we had. It's another generation. Do you understand? Meaning we are not going to close. Professor Mukhoba, if you think there's going to be extreme change to address what I say with the case of university currents, I think we are not going to get it. Meaning we need political leadership. There are fundamentals, as discussed as a committee, that we cannot compromise. We understand the issue of academic freedom. We should, that is very important. We should debate that. We understand what you're saying about the institutional autonomy. But we always say as committee, there is public accountability. But we are saying that the objective of government, the objective of the constitution should be met. Therefore, there's no institutional autonomy. The constitution guides all of us. We live in the framework of the constitution. Therefore, maybe next time, we must say, we must be able also to be psychologists than it goes to these guidelines, possibly, to this, what is terms of reference of this oversight committee. Because when we had, you see the unfortunate thing about this committee of ours, I'm a very critical person, we also hear these things, oversight committee, I see it on TV, Singapore, this one and that, what is it going to be its task? Now we only meet these things here. Maybe to see also ourselves in terms of reference. Look, you can request the minister if it was here to say, how do we broaden the scope of these important committees, like a committee such as this, which is so important? Because they have done very good work for the country, but we need to take this work forward to make sure that it's actual work that is being done. Because we've been having accommodation committee, we've been having a funding committee, now it's oversight committee. And I hope that there's going to be practical, tangible things and when that is going to be done. Therefore, that's why the minister must begin to come here in the next period. We are going to invite, maybe you'll be a member of the parliament again. If I'm a member of parliament, I will request them to come again. Therefore, that's what I want to suggest, maybe as a way forward. But let's appreciate the good work done by this committee and the collective of people. It helps us, opens up. It should be a dialogue that we're discussing in each and every corner to try and resolve the tension.
Thank you very much, Honourable Banga. At least I'm happy because you're giving the way forward now in our comments, as to say, from where to as a committee, what is it that we should do. But then, Honourable Banga, just to share with you in the House, the minister has just offered that we'll be having a strategy meeting, a very
important meeting for this term of ours to pave the way for it on the 12th of November, so where all these issues that you are mentioning, that is where we'll be having, I think the notice is still going to out, but I just felt that I should definitely need to be there. Honourable Makubeng.
Thanks. I think perhaps the best we can do at this point in time may be to appreciate and leave it at this moment, because the tendency is to go beyond what the brief of the committee was about and start raising almost everything because we've got time and so on, when we did not have that. The committee does not necessarily account to us. It accounts to the minister. So we must not confuse issues when we hear, and I'm sorry to use that particular word. I'm using that in quotes, you know. Now, some of the issues we raised was to try and understand more what the committee was about to do and get clarification, so that next time we also are in a better position to understand the issues and we can engage with the matters. Where we think there's need for intervention, it will be our brief to do that. And where we need the department, the ministry in particular, to account more on certain things, will be aware of what issues to raise and so on in that regard. So I think they've done their job in terms of the terms of reference. Even if we could have wanted that to be expanded, it couldn't be us necessarily here. It was going to be us perhaps through the ministry. But that's what you got as terms of reference, and you worked within that, will be assessed by the very minister that appointed you to do that kind of work. They will know whether you met the terms of reference or not. You know, but we chair, all of us to plead for was that we got what we wanted from the committee. I think they've clarified the issues in terms of what they did. Ours is to appreciate that and perhaps conclude through your own remarks, Chair, this particular interaction. Thanks.
Honourable Makubeng, in as much as I agree with you, we have got what we want, but I don't think it will be fair to close that door if ever there are members who still want to know more, you know. For me, what you are saying now is that you must conclude the meeting, of which really I just cannot take what you are saying as of now. If ever, this is the meeting is very open, if ever members still need to ask more, yeah. You can't be this much and say, if ever we are satisfied, and you say the meeting must be closed. No. Yes, we have got the brief, but really, if the members still feel that they think that they still need to ask, I cannot close the meeting before they do that.
Chair, I agree with you.
In as much as really we have got, we are thankful to the committee, but members, let us say, the meeting is not as closed. As long as you still have something to ask from the committee, from the report, just open the chance. Yes, indeed, after this, we are still going to take forward whatever we have received today for more discussions, but this time was open for us that we question more, so that we have got a clear understanding for us to move forward with. So, Honourable Makubeng, I want to take the suggestion that you have just come up with. I'm sorry to do that. Prof. Makubeng.
To say this, I think when we were doing this work, we didn't know what we were going to find, which is typical of what happens in science. But if I had to ask members of this committee here and say, what you have learned today is that the University of Fort Hare is the university that actually is leading the way in terms of providing equity and providing high-level knowledge production in the country. That's what it shows. Now, if I had to add most people in the country, Fort Hare may not even arise. That name Fort Hare may not be arise. Now, you all know that. What are you going to do about it as the portfolio committee? Because it's one of our institutions that has got an important history, but again, it's leading an important history in the so-called transformation, if you want to use it in restricted terms, such that it could be bending around. I know that if it was any other university that we all know, it will all be in the newspapers. Yeah. And everybody will be talking about it. Because in Fort Hare, we're shy about it. We have to, you know, to hide ourselves. It is the university that has actually shown that you can deliver equity and you can still have high knowledge production.
price clear. Places like UKZN, we are trying to dive in there, but we are not yet there. We are diving into that process. Well, no, I'm just saying we are trying to enter that quadrant, kicking and screaming, but we are trying. Fort Hare is there, and no other institution is there. So I think it's an important lesson to learn. And the other thing that I just wanted to say is that, you know, when you are managing a university, it's complex, and all you know is that everything is good in general terms. What you don't know is where the worms are. And this formula actually provides that. You know that if you're service staff or you're trades or whatever it is, you know where you are not actually doing the work, which before you didn't know. You are in this university, and you can also know that, okay, I'm at UKZN, but Zenda is doing it better than me. How are they doing it that I can't do? Or they also know, okay, at UKZN, there's something they're doing. How do they do it? So we can learn from each other. Before, we could never do that because everything is closed. We're autonomous. And if we are asked, all of us are transforming. And you know that statement. If all of you are transforming, there is no transformation at all. That's the common way. So I think there are important lessons to learn from here. But as I said, the policies that must direct this, the framework that must come direct this, must come from, I think, this house is yourselves and the department and so forth. All we can do is provide you with the scientific basis for that, and we'll try to do that. That's why we wanted this work to be reviewed by scholars and peers, so that it is not something that Cash and I have dreamt and the Transformation Oversight Committee have just conscious about, so that we come and make ourselves good this year. It has to be robustly tested by other people who could challenge us and tell us, no, this is no good at all. Thank you.
The question about gender that was asked, I will attempt to answer it, Professor Kovic, if you don't mind. It's in the same lines, honorable member, as male and female. For instance, if you admitted so many males in first year and so many females, then you check how many of them qualify. At graduation, do you have the same proportion of male and female? And the answer is that most institutions do not have that equity. They may have it at admission, but don't have it at graduation. So it is along the same lines of male and female.
On lighter note, I'm suggesting the university suck my words. I'm sure for they would be more humbled if the care university say you are the one and they give them something. So it's I say to Am today, for example, I did not did you say it? And you have these things, you notice that there's something with the defender. I'm saying if it's too hard for them, it was something that says we have found something, and the world will get to know. And that's the incident.
I think the department is taking that. Yeah. Now, thank you very much.
No, I was just looking on that equity versus research output. And I was thinking about these universities of technology. When they have put there, compared there, I don't know how they could regulate out. Is it fair to say University of Technology, you are not doing research, and therefore, yeah, I'm just throwing that when we are going on further with this, there's a way of accommodating such differences so that we do compare apples to apples.
Thanks, ma'am. Just on that one of the research output of the institutions, we had been doing this analysis of research output by the institutions, and the comment that Prof. Makhova made on the volume versus the per capita, we used that quite a lot, and it depends on which what's the purpose of that classification. That you are using. On per capita, we found that many of the universities of technology, as you can see them in, which quadrant is that, the bottom left, whether you call it one or two or whatever, one, quadrant one, all of them are there. What we found was that the main reason, of course they were not established as research institutions, but also the main reason also was the qualification of academics at that, those institutions, possibly without any exception on all of them, not only just the universities of technology, but the others as well. Now, what we are doing as the department, we've always been having what we call the research development grant, but we started to put a requirement against that research development grant. And for all those institutions, again, Prof. Honorable Member, the requirement for all of them is that they use those the research development grant for staff or academic to improve the academic staff qualifications. And also on the other side there's also teaching development grant, and again it's also focused partly on academic staff development, but also on then on the tools that the academics use for teaching as well. So our understanding, just generally on research, without even equity yet, that has been the focus. But the more now we're getting the report from the Transformation Oversight Committee, the more also we're going to be focusing the attachment to those funds into the issues of equity. Because the focus on equity has been on the top left, top right quadrant, where we are then saying to those institutions, but the grant is very small for them, but we are saying to them they must start focusing on equity, both in terms of race and gender, and as part of developing of our academics for the system. And the other approach is that those at the top right quadrant should partner with those that are on the bottom left quadrant in the development in research collaboration. Basically, that also means getting the academics who are studying from the bottom left to study at the top right institutions. So we it's still in a small scale for now, but those terms are relative again, because small scale in this case, it's about 180 million rand that's being used, but that's divided by all the 23 universities, so it becomes a small amount. And now we are also going to be having, in fact, it's no longer 23, it's going to be 25, so that those institutions, those two additional, in fact, possibly three, with the Medusa coming up, that grant has to become significant, and that is from our side now as what we are doing. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My very last one, can you go to a slide, National Student Equity Index 2011, the one with graduation and enrollment? Yeah. The previous one. Yeah, this one. Can you explain this one for me, please? There's something that you're having here that you don't have. Please.
This
Maro Station Coaching in the South Africa. Can you make it an example?
University of South Africa. Right. So you look at the University of South Africa. Its enrollment equity index falls in the first quadrant. Its graduation equity index falls in the first quintile. Apologies. And the graduation equity index falls in the second quintile. So it shows that there's a gulf between the profile of the students it's enrolling versus the students that it's graduating.
as a committee, really, I think we are very happy to get this report, and as we have promised, there are so many things that have been, it has been an eye-opener in so many angles when it comes to our institute, to our universities, and we are going to take this report, use it, go forward with it together with the Department of Higher Education Training to look at some of the things that have been mentioned in this report, and hopefully this was not the time we meet you. We're still going to go forward and engage on this report, but for now, we really want to thank you for the good work that has been done, and that is going to take our country forward. Because really, as a committee, this is the tool now that you are going to be using, even when you go and visit these institutions, where we sit down with them. When it comes to the issues of transformation, at least we have been armed today to say, what more can we request from these institutions above what we have been engaging them on. So thank you very much. This meeting for now, this part, we're done with this part, but with the members of Parliament, can you just remain behind for at least 30 minutes? There are a set of minutes that we need to adopt before we leave this week. Thank you very much.
All of them. Thank you.